Meanwhile, on Planet Earth is brought to you by 365 by Whole Foods Market. There's being a fan, and then there's this. This man got LeBron James' face shaved into the back of his head. That's a haircut. What do we think? It's exceptional, right?
You also have to explain it to the people in your life. Why did I do this?
No, I think some things don't require explanation. Can I just ask one question? Can they do Aaron Rodgers? If we could do Aaron Rodgers with that, that might be something I'd be interested in. I don't know. I get Aaron Rodgers in the back of my head like that. Do you think that would look good? Can I pull that off?
I think on the golf course it would be a talking point, conversation point on the golf course. I
know. The good thing about that is if your star player lets you down, then you can just tell the guy to go in and disfigure it.
I don't know why it tickled me.
Don't do that, Greedy. Don't do that.
If that guy can do Aaron Rodgers, then I need his number. All right, as we get up with you here, we are live, as always, from the Seaport. We are brought to you by Patron. Perfection starts with Patron. The squad is ready. Doris Burke is on the way. And Joel Embiid had the statement of the night last night in Boston. Sixers on the road. You figure Tatum and company coming home would be comfortable. You would figure wrong. Joel Embiid legs all night long.
Yeah, he just had the look of a guy that was going to refuse to let his team lose, right? Anything it takes to win, dominating them early on the offensive glass.
He was Mr. Inside. He was Mr. Outside. Embiid 11 points in the first quarter, and he was just getting warmed up. We've been waiting with that knee for him to have a huge night. Here it finally was, legs.
Yeah, late clock, catches it, little lean back. By this point, he's already lathered up and in rhythm.
21 in the first half for him, and then they're working it further. He's got the two-man game going with James Harden. Sixers pulling away, and Embiid doing it on both ends of the floor. How about the block?
Yeah, this is the impact. I think this is what separated him in the MVP race, his ability to make plays like that. He had several of them in this game.
On the other end, Daniel House taking it to the house. Sixers up 17, 30 seconds to play in the third. Embiid on a nice pass. Listen to the Boston fans. Joe Mazzulla's team getting booed out of their own building, down 16 going to the fourth quarter. Jason Tatum trying to keep them in it. He would score 36. That got it to 11. But anytime there was a question, legs, the Sixers had an answer.
At no point did Boston make a legitimate threatening run in this game. Everybody showed up for the Sixers.
Joel Embiid in particular, little pick, little pop. He squawks down the three. He would score 33. And then for good measure, I told you he had four block shots. Oh, the chase down. Joel doing it in every single way. Sixers win it by a dozen. They take a 3-2 series lead. Joel, you are on the doorstep.
I don't care. I honestly don't care. We still got to, got to get one more win. And then obviously you're going home, so you're going to have a lot of, energy, the crowd. And I would imagine everybody plays better at home too. So I do play better at home.
We've got booed before, so it's not anything new. We didn't play well today. Fans could see it. You guys saw it, and you know that.
That was a strange night, but in the end, the Sixers are a win away from making the conference final for the first time in 22 years. That was the Allen Iverson team. They wound up losing to Shaq and Kobe in the final. You see the chances they've had since then. They've never been able to get it done. We'll talk about Embiid in a minute, and Legs will break down his performance. But let's start with the Celtics. Legs made the point that very seldom do you see a team as good as this playing on their home floor that never even makes a run that puts them back. How do you explain what we saw from Boston last night?
This has been an inconsistent team in the playoffs last year and in the playoffs this year. Since game two against the Hawks, when they looked like they were just going to sweep the Hawks right out of the playoffs, they just haven't been the same team, particularly on defense. They were okay last night, not great. I thought they were disorganized on offense, just kind of moving the ball around without a lot of purpose too many times, attacking the wrong matchups. And that kind of aimlessness has been their trademark in their bad games. It doesn't take long. It can take a 3 or 4 minute stretch of just sort of purposeless basketball, and a team as good as the Sixers with a star as dominant as Joel Embiid just takes the game right from you and never ever gives it back. And that's what they did last night.
Friedel, how much of a factor in this is coaching? That the obvious difference, that man right there, Joe Mazzulla, again, who has had moments this year where we have sung his praises, but right now, does it feel as though his inexperience is a factor in this series?
It's huge, and it seems to be growing even bigger each game, Greeny, because this is a team that was built to win it all this year, and this is a learning curve that Joe Mazzulla is dealing with on the fly. Guys, this Boston team lacks focus in big games. Game one, they went through the motions. Game four, they couldn't close because they made too many mental mistakes. And last night, on a big stage at home, they were never in it. It just is inexplicable for a group that had such high hopes. I don't think it's over. I still think Boston can win the series. But Greeny, Joe Mazzulla is not only getting out coached, but he is learning and making mistakes that shouldn't be happening for a team of this caliber.
He's the youngest coach in the NBA, and so to some degree you understand that. But to Nick's point, this is a team that is built to win it right now. They were two wins away from a championship a year ago. That said, the point was made earlier, and I think it's an important one. A year ago, basically to the day, they were going to Milwaukee, down 3-2 in this round of the playoffs on the verge of getting bounced down. And Jason Tatum, I should have gotten the numbers in front, had a monster night. Put together one of those huge NBA nights and carried
46 points
and carried his team onto a game seven where they wound up winning it. Do you see that happening tomorrow night in Philly?
I'm not writing it off. I think Philly's going to win the game. They're going to seize the moment, mainly because of some things we talked about earlier. This they've got all the pieces working right now. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's playing well in rhythm. Harden is showing up in a big way for Embiid. Feels different this year. You can't discount it because they've got top shelf talent at the top of their roster. And they've got some guys we haven't really heard from too much in this series that could inject themselves. Al Horford has killed the Sixers since he's been in Boston. Does he show up and make 4 or 5 threes? Marcus Smart, quiet last night. Derek White, who was so critically important to them last year in their run, nowhere to be seen last night. So there's still a lot more to grab for the rest of that roster. You can't discount their ability to do it, but it just does feel different with this Philly
team. Discount is too strong, but generally speaking, does it feel like the Celtics have another one of those nights in them tomorrow night?
Maybe not like 46 points from Tatum, but I think game six is going to be a war. I think they're going to come to fight. I don't think this is a case of a team that's going to roll over. Can I go back to the Mazzulla thing real
sure.
fast? The thing that has really struck me and confuse me about Boston is we're in game six of the second round, and they don't know what their big man rotation should be. The Al Horford-Robert Williams tandem,
yeah,
that was their starting tandem last year. It doesn't play anymore. Grant Williams plays in the first half and then doesn't play in the second half. Robert Williams went from being kind of a bit player in this series after having huge expectations to all of a sudden he's the only big man on the floor for extended stretches, even when he has to guard Joel Embiid, which is a matchup the Boston Celtics don't want. They're just, it's a confused muddle of a big man rotation, and it was one of their tent poles in making their run last year. They were huge and impenetrable on defense, and they've just lost a handle on it.
Well, and they certainly couldn't get a handle on Embiid last night. So let's turn our attention to him. Because of that knee, I think there was some fear we just weren't going to get vintage Embiid. We certainly got it last night, and I know you've got some tape.
Yeah, he looks great. We're going to talk about Harden and Embiid, why what they're doing is working so well, and an adjustment Doc Rivers made that's helping this work. The pick-and-pop game is really what this series is about. Joel Embiid gets any area of floor he wants when he goes to the middle. It stops right here. Start with this screen, and Embiid's going to set it. And none of this is going to work, by the way, if James Harden isn't effective right now as a scorer. Because now he's going to get in here, and you're going to engage Al Horford. And when Al Horford reacts to this, now you're going to see Embiid gobble up this space right here. And keep an eye, and I'll get to these guys in a second, on the weak side, these two defenders, and why they don't rotate. So here comes Embiid. And the first point I want to make is this is the evolution of Joel Embiid. 3 years ago, he's probably going to stay here and shoot a three. Or he's going to catch it, put his head down, go in here and run somebody over, commit an offensive foul. So in a second, I'm going to show you the space he gobbles up. But on the weak side, people might say, well, why is, you know, Jaylen Brown not just stunt right here to take this away? Let Jason Tatum on the weak side play two guys, right, wherever that ball comes out, particularly focus on the shooter. And you know what? If you want to leave P.J. Tucker all night, go ahead. Here's why. Doc Rivers has put P.J. Tucker in the dunk spot. He's not just standing there anymore. He's running the baseline. So that means that Jason Tatum can't really leave. He's got to stay sort of locked in here and mostly worried about this shooter, which means if he goes here, Jaylen Brown has to stay here. And now there is a ton of space for Joel Embiid in the middle of the floor. But watch how much space he gobbles up. He catches it there. He shoots it here. He closes down the distance, rises up. There's nothing Al Horford could do, makes the shot. One more example, and again, this is Harden being effective in a couple games in this series, and now, you know, he puts his head down, gets downhill, and the guy he's going to engage is going to be Robert Williams. He's going to get him to retreat. Again, Embiid catches it. Now, this is where he's evolved to, the patience. Watch how many times he jabs. He's going to jab, and he's going to react on Robert Williams' hand going up, down, finally gets it down, and at the exact same time, Embiid rises up, shoots a practice shot over the top. This is elite level. We've compared him to Hakeem Olajuwon. We've compared him to Shaq. That's David Robinson. The jab step, the face-up that he added to his game. Joel Embiid virtually unguardable now in the middle of the floor because of his size and his shooting touch.
That's really extremely well done right there. And let's also give a little love to Harden. And you were around him for that, I don't know, what, eight minutes that he was in Brooklyn or whatever it was. It was such an incredibly short time. But look, Harden's postseason history follows him, and it's not unfair to point it out. But it would be unfair not to then say, boy, he's been, for the most part, terrific in this series.
He's been great. And I laughed at the idea, Greeny, before the series, that James Harden offensively could be the player they need him to be consistently. In those two games early in the series, 1 and 4, they won. He was the difference. But last night, guys, this is exactly the way he needs to play for the Sixers to be at their best.
How about Harden?
He's orchestrating everything he needs. And more importantly, I think he showed, and the Sixers showed to themselves, just how good they can be last night. They have the confidence now of being able to do it again.
In Game 3, the Celtics played Harden by saying, if you want to drive, we're going to let you drive. We're going to stick to Embiid. And it freaked him out. He had kind of Ben Simmons-y moments where he would get in there and say, I don't know what to do. Game 4 and 5, he said, if you're letting me drive, I'm taking the space. And that has given Embiid more space to work with. Last night was a reminder. They don't need Houston, James Harden, even though they did in Games 1 and 4. When Embiid's rolling and their team is right, they just need good Philadelphia James Harden, and they can absolutely win the championship. They just need to not get bad playoff James Harden. They don't need 45. You give me 20 and 10 on good shooting, that's all they need with this team and with Embiid playing like that.
They are actually now the favorites in the Eastern Conference, according to Caesars Sportsbook. I'm going to put odds up in a second to show you what's happening. In fact, why don't I just do it now? Cindy, put them up there, and then we'll just talk about it because it's the point I want to make. The Nuggets and the Lakers, who were 14-1 before the playoffs began, are now the favorites to win the NBA championship. And that makes sense because they're both ahead in their respective series out west. But amongst the teams in the East right now, Legs, the Sixers are the favorites to win the Eastern Conference. Does that feel right to you right now? Is Philly finally going to the NBA Finals?
It looks like they are to me. I think they're going to get to the Finals. And, you know, you look at James Harden's career, and there are people that always think you take it personal with James Harden. It's not. It's just, you know, being real about certain moments in the past. I didn't think he had Game 4 in him. If they do get to the Finals and they win a championship, he's going to look back. That's the most significant moment in James Harden's career. I think Game 4 last year for Steph, same thing. Winning that game in Boston with what he did in that game to get them even, and then they go on to win it. Another championship post-Durant, right? That's what Steph Curry did. James Harden doesn't have one yet. If they get to the Finals and win it, we're going to remember that game for the rest of his career.
Legacies can be rewritten at this time of year. That's the beauty of the playoffs. All right, let me break on that thought quickly. I have so much more to get to here, including Doris Burke is going to jump into the conversation. She'll be talking about LeBron and the Lakers in San Francisco. Could this be the last dance for the dynasty in Golden State? Plus, are the Nuggets about to shove the Suns out of the playoffs? And if so, what does that say for that man, Kevin Durant? We'll answer all those questions, and DB will join us live. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Come on, get up. All right, back on Get Up, and we are getting drips and drabs of the NFL schedule, and we have a major alert. The NFL's first ever Black Friday game is scheduled for here, or outside of here in New York, in New Jersey, the Dolphins at the Jets. Look at Aaron Rodgers on that graphic. It's still taking some getting used to, and candidly, it's a delight. Anyway, we got that game scheduled for Friday, November 24th. I know where I'll be. Giants at Eagles Christmas Day is another one that we've just gotten. The schedule coming out, we'll have a full release special tomorrow night. In the meantime, right now we've got the performance of the night, and it came from Nikola Jokic. Once again, oh, before the game, Matt Ishbia. We're all good after the incident of the other night. So we got Devin Booker and Kevin Durant trying to make it three straight wins in this series, but they're going to need one on the road, and KD was doing all he could early on legs.
Yeah, they got hit with an onslaught early, but then they made their run in the second quarter to get it within working distance. Booker here ties it up with a deep three.
Booker had 19 in the first half. Durant had 10 in the quarter, but the Nuggets were down just one, and Nikola Jokic was heating up.
Yeah, nothing you can do about this. You've got to give up something to the guy. It's going to be that shot, pick and pop three.
Yeah, more from Jokic here. Aaron Gordon finds Jokic as he cuts down the lane. Nuggets by eight. They couldn't do anything with him. Murray driving, kicking. Jokic again. Jokic had 17 in the third. Denver opening up a 13-point lead, and then that would open up the corners. Michael Porter Jr., little three-ball corner pocket. Nuggets a 16-point edge. Oh, the Broncos love it. Sean Payton, Russell Wilson in the house. Meanwhile, action going on over here on the sideline. We got pushing and shoving in a huddle over here, Len.
Yeah, it starts with Bruce Brown trying to get in the Suns huddle to see what they're drawing up. Jokic comes over. Durant, who most people would acknowledge, cannot throw Nikola Jokic the way that he does here.
Yes.
So it's a little bit embellished by the big guy.
Oh, come on. Look at Jokic. He gets a technical there. That's a ridiculous moment. Actually, Brown and Durant got the technicals there. Ishbia uninvited or uninvolved in this situation. Under 8 minutes to go. Nuggets up 21, by the way. We got an alley. We got an oop. We got a triple-double.
Nice running a ball screen with your center as the handler.
He's ridiculous. Lob. Nikola Jokic now has the most triple-doubles of any center in postseason history. He passed Wilt Chamberlain on that list last night. And so the Suns are on the brink. Now, it's worth noting that in games when facing elimination, Kevin Durant has averaged over 30 points. Only LeBron, Michael, and Wilt have averaged more in elimination games. So let's dive into what we see in this series right now. We'll have the critical Game 6 tomorrow night, late night, here on ESPN. Kevin Durant and company trying to keep it alive. The first thing you said to me this morning was, you and I both liked the Suns before the playoffs began. How do we feel now?
I was wrong. We were wrong. Because this team was built on Kevin Durant being able to lift everybody else up to a different level. Guys, there aren't a lot of other options. I know Chris Paul hasn't been out there, and he would be a calming influence. But when you look at this roster right now, you know what you're getting from KD. You know what you're getting from Devin Booker. You don't know what the hell you're getting from Ayton. And then after that, it's like, who else is going to help? This is a flawed team, a flawed roster. And if they can't find a way to come back and win these two games, everybody is going to look and go, not only was this year a failure because the window opened up with Kevin, but how do you improve it on the fly to think that this group is going to be where they need to be moving forward to be in that title conversation?
Now, it's an interesting sport because I've always thought the team with the best player tends to win. In this case, well, I guess we can't really say that Jokic isn't the best player in the series. But Durant and Booker are, in my opinion right now, the best duo in the entire league. But to his point, even the two best players going at it together like that can't do it without some semblance of help. They're going to need to do it twice in a row now to stay alive.
Everything Nick just said, every bit of it, was entirely predictable when they made this trade. And that's not to say they shouldn't have made it. It's just we all knew what the cost of the trade was going to be and what the challenges were going to be, and those challenges have borne fruit. One of the reasons this has happened is, we should probably say, the Denver Nuggets are awesome.
They're really good.
They're awesome. They know how to play together. Their depth has showed up in this whole series. Bruce Brown, 26 points, I think, last night. One of the best signings of the entire offseason was Calvin Booth going out and getting Bruce Brown to round out their team. And Jokic, just a cool 31-13-10 for the series on 55% shooting. Like, ho-hum, taking out a little jumper.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
People don't get excited enough about Nikola Jokic, and who even knows what all the reasons why are. But the reality is, I was about to say that the Suns have the two best players in this series. Even I'm guilty of it. This guy was the MVP each of the last 2 years and was the runner-up this season. That said, it's not over. KD and Booker go home. They've won their two home games in this series. How do you assess their chances of, let's say, forcing this into a game seven and then a shot at winning it and going on to a conference final?
Well, just the explosive firepower shot making of those two guys at home, it gives them a good chance to get this back to Denver for game seven, in which case you probably wouldn't give them any chance to win that game, even with Kevin Durant, because of how good and how dominant Denver's been at home. Phoenix was in that game at half, so you go in the locker room, you think, we got to have a game here. Denver comes out and started that second half and hits them with a blitz. The game was over 6 minutes into the third quarter. That's how dialed in and locked in they are right now. So I don't think Phoenix could win a game seven. But here's the thing. For Kevin Durant, will it be a failure if he doesn't win a championship in Phoenix? Yeah, but not necessarily this year.
Right.
He just has to win one before he's done in Phoenix. And the challenge is going to be, how do you improve their roster enough to give him a legitimate chance against this team going forward, you know, against some of the other Dallas, who knows what Dallas ends up doing, the Clippers, they ever get healthy. There's a lot of other teams that are still in the mix that we didn't see their best this year. That's the challenge for Phoenix going forward, but it won't be a failure unless it's all done in Phoenix and he didn't win one.
No, the future of the Western Conference probably also includes teams like Sacramento,
definitely,
maybe Memphis and New Orleans, if they should ever get healthy. Who knows what in the world that's going to be. So the reality is, every year that goes by, we keep saying, well, Durant's got time. You wake up one morning and he doesn't have all that much time. Can they get this thing done? He's finally got the right teammate. Right? He's got the right guy to run with now in Devin Booker. Can they put together a championship roster in the foreseeable window in Phoenix?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As long as those two guys are healthy, they can do it. The big question that has emerged in this playoffs is, what is DeAndre Ayton's future on this team? Because he has just looked out of it on both ends of the floor in this series. Too many pick and rolls where he's just kind of watched Jamal Murray go right by him. And I know he's panicked about Jokic. I got to get back to Jokic. Your job is to protect the rim, big fella. And there was a play last night where he went up for a layup and then spun away from the rim. And you could see the whole bench on Phoenix be like, man, again with this?
Yeah.
You could literally see it on the bench. And it just feels like that relationship is going to need some looking at.
There may be a new direction they have to roll in. Meanwhile, the direction we're going in next is to Doris Burke. DB is going to jump in here with her insight into everything that we are seeing. Joel Embiid, a huge night. Celtics on the brink of elimination. Are they done, or can they bring this one back to being down? And does Steph need to go scorched earth to save the Warriors season and dynasty tonight? Don't miss DB live next. Get up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, bottom of the hour on a big basketball day. Let's play a game of what if. Hey, Timmy Legler, what if LeBron James wins a fifth championship this year?
It will be one of the crown jewels of his career to do it with this team the way the regular season went. But all he will do is further cement himself as number two all time.
He does not move himself up to number one,
goat
no matter
bleeding.
What.
No goat bleeding from legs.
We got none of it there.
Wouldn't do it.
Fridell, let me come to you. What if the Warriors come all the way back from 3-1 down and win this series?
Then Klay and Draymond are going to have an absolute field day with all those old Cleveland 3-1 jokes. Yeah. They are going to turn it all around. Draymond's going to be on every show in the world saying, see, you all gave up on us. It was never meant to be. They will be the big winners.
I love that one. And how about the other way? Hey, Zach Lowe, what if the Lakers close it out tonight in game five?
They'll be very happy. That's a nice outcome for them. I mean, they'd be thrilled. The real answer is, it becomes Warriors dynasty watch time How do they try to put this team back together? Are all three core pieces going to be Warriors for life? What happens with Jordan Poole? What happens with Bob Myers? All those questions that have been over here now come over here right at center stage.
Well, let's go over there a minute. Let's come right here. I'll let you know because I promised you Doris Burke we're having some small technical issues getting Doris ready to go. We will have her hopefully coming up in a few minutes. But let's live there for a moment here. In the event that the Warriors season comes to an end, be it tonight or Friday night or somewhere along the line in this series, then what does happen? This is one of the truly great dynasties that we've seen in NBA history. For those three guys and the coach to stay together as long as they have and be the core, we've not seen that more than a handful of times in the history of the sport. Is it over when it ends here?
I'm not ready to say that now. And you're right to say when we talk about the Warriors dynasty on the player side, we're talking about those three guys.
Yeah.
Everyone else has come and gone for the most part. It's those three guys. And part of that is going to be Draymond Green's decision. He has a player option. If he wants to leave and he has a deal lined up that's better than what he can get financially with the Warriors, the decision is out of Golden State's control. He can leave. I'm not willing to just write that off and say it's over. These guys all love each other. They've been around each other a long time. They certainly have lived through a lot of Draymond drama and come out better for it, and they're still really good. It might be more likely they tinker around the edges and try, can we move Jordan Poole to save some money? What happens to some of the other guys like that? What happens to Bob Myers? You know, he's still without a contract at the top of the organization. So there are some questions, but I wouldn't just write it off like those core guys are over. We'll never see them play together again. I think that's too extreme.
All right, fair enough. And literally, as I was talking about the technical problems we were having with Doris, I then immediately was told in that moment they got fixed. So I can bring the Hall of Famer Doris Burke into the conversation. Hello, DB. As Mike Breen would say,
good
hey,
morning.
DB.
Good morning.
We're in the midst of a conversation about the significance of this game tonight, Lakers-Warriors, because these two, you know, obviously the legendary franchises and the legendary stars and all the rest of that. Let's X and O this thing. As you've been watching it, we have seen the Lakers put the Warriors into a big hole. What's the one most important thing you think the Warriors need to get done on the floor tonight to extend this to a Game 6 and maybe beyond?
Well, I'm looking directly at Klay Thompson because Jordan Poole has not been trustworthy enough for Steve Kerr to keep him on the floor for longer stretches, right? He plays him 10 minutes, he gives him a brief glimpse, he turns it over right away, and you see the early hook from Steve Kerr. So in the one game the Warriors won, what did Klay do? He was that shot maker extraordinaire. He goes for 30 points. I think he makes 11 for 18. Without that pressure that Jordan Poole can put on defenses and alleviate some of that scoring pressure on Klay Thompson. I'm also looking at Andrew Wiggins, who had a couple of open three opportunities. This can't be all Steph. And just to Zach's point, right, this dynasty, I'm not prepared to give up on the champs yet, but it feels tenuous. And I'm going to go back to something Steve Kerr talked to us about at the start of the playoffs, because, and Legs may, you know, poo-poo this idea, but I believe in it deeply. At their best, the soul and spirit of the Warriors, that collective bond that this group had, and Zach just touched on this, those three guys, that's been pivotal to their success. You can't put a number on it. You can't define it. But I asked Steve Kerr, is that soul and spirit what it once was? And his answer was, we're as close as we've been. And I traced that line directly back to the Draymond punch. They have spent 82 games, 6 months, and now a couple of series trying to get back to who they are. Now, there are problems basketball-wise, the turnovers, the poor shot selection, the lack of quality depth. All of that is contributing. But this group feels different. And I wonder long-term about Bob Myers. And if he departs, what impact does that have on Steve Kerr? I am with Zach. I'm not prepared to give up because you're going to have to put the champs on the mat. But it feels more tenuous than it ever has, Greeny.
Well, it's such a fascinating thing, Tim, because we can go big picture as we are, or littler picture, which is tonight trying to win and crawl their way back into the series, which they believe they can do. But let's go to that bigger picture. Generally speaking, does it feel as though there has been something fractured? I think most people know what Doris is referring to, the incident that took place between Draymond Green and Jordan Poole at the beginning of the season. And they've said all the right things, so they've put that behind them. But it's easy to understand, and you were a player, where that would be a difficult thing to get past. And then you and I've talked about maybe Poole, with a lot of the criticism he received after the bad shot he took at the end of game one, maybe he's still recovering from Do you think that this team just does not have the cohesiveness that we have been accustomed to seeing them have over the decade or so they've been so good?
Yeah, I fully agree with what Doris just said. There's definitely a different vibe about this group. But I think when we start talking about, is this it? Is this the end of the road? Typically, when we get to that point with groups that have accomplished a lot together, one of two things usually happens. Their best player typically is no longer a guy that as best player can lead you to a championship. Mm. That's not the case with the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry is still that guy. Or it's broken up because two stars can't coexist, right? And like the Lakers would be a great example, Kobe and Shaq. They had more work to do. They didn't get there because of that. So I don't feel like this is necessarily the end, but there's definitely something that's going to have to be visited in the summer to try to figure out how do you get that, do you cohesiveness and vibe back. I think Jordan Poole could be somebody that's going to be looked at real hard in terms of moving. But when you give a guy $128 million and this is your return on investment, what's the value going into the summer or an offseason for Jordan Poole?
Look, I'm old enough to remember, and by this, Doris, I jokingly mean, last year we were sitting together in an arena in Boston with the confetti falling on top of the Warriors, and we were saying, oh, this team's about to go on and even about to run. They have all these young pieces, Kuminga and Moody and the center, Wiseman, whose name I have already forgotten, that was going to lead them into the next iteration, and that has not, clearly at this moment, does not appear as though it's going to be the case. So let's put them to the side for the moment, Doris, and let's talk about the Lakers. Now, here's a team, and Legs makes fun of me because I make him talk about them all year long when they're bad. And all of a sudden, here they are, and they're a win away from the Western Conference Final, and Vegas has them as the co-favorite to win the championship. What are you seeing from LeBron's group right now?
Well, I think it starts on the defensive end of the floor. And if you think about Darvin Ham's history as part of that Detroit Pistons championship squad in 2004, if you think about his history as an assistant coach under Mike Budenholzer, it all begins with rim protection and what they do on the defensive end of the floor, Mike. And listen, Anthony Davis has contested by far the most shots in the playoffs. He's holding opponents to 28%. To me, it feels like he is absolutely everywhere. And we have spent an awful lot of time discussing what Anthony Davis's variability on the offensive end of the floor has been. And that's appropriate. But this guy has been as dominant defensively, that youth and athleticism, Jared Vanderbilt, you know, what the play they got from Lonnie Walker, those infusions help. Here's what I'm curious about tonight on offensively. And Darvin Ham talked to us a little bit about this a couple weeks ago. Anthony Davis, because of where his jump shooting is right now, his sweet spot is sort of that short jumper in the paint. So you don't typically think of a big man a little pinned down into a curl and a short jump shot. If they can get him the ball on the move, if he can rim run and get, you know, 4 to 6 to 8 points off offensive rebound putbacks or beating the Warriors up the floor in transition, you know, without trying at his size, just by rim running, he can get to 6-8 points. And then you start to see the ball go in and now a little post up. Now your jump shot flows a little bit smoother. But this guy has been as dominant and brilliant defensively as we have seen throughout this postseason.
Can we count on it, Legs? They need one more monster performance from Anthony Davis. When he gave them that in game one, I remember I was talking, you know, on the countdown guys, and they were saying he can't do it consistently. He doesn't have to do it 7 times.
Right.
They need it 4 times. Is tonight the night? Can he do it again tonight? You know, I have been lobbying for them to put all their eggs into the basket of game 6. I have not gotten any support on that. That's okay. I've died on worse hills than this before. Can Anthony Davis give them to that tonight?
Well, Friedel was your star witness on this argument. You brought in Doris. I can't wait to hear her input on this suggestion. So let's get to that first before I answer your question.
Here's what I'd say. I defer, obviously, to your expertise. You've forgotten more about the game today than I'll ever know. But I've been watching it my whole life. 50 years I've been watching basketball.
Stop prefacing it. I am a hard no on this. You don't mess around with the game.
Go ahead, Doris.
You don't mess around with the game, Greeny. You don't. If you're healthy and well, you play. You've proven you can win on their home floor. I am a believer sort of basketball karma. Who is to say you can take nothing for granted, particularly with the injury history of Anthony? Let's say he tweaks an ankle rebounding in traffic at the start of game six at home, or LeBron James, who most mere mortal for the foot injury that he suffered, would have shut it down a while ago. I take nothing for granted. Stop it. There's no prefacing necessary. Do it.
Here's the only argument I'll make. I will make my last gasp. This is me begging from pleading this stand, okay? The worst scenario, in my opinion, is that the Lakers play tonight like their season's line. They play LeBron 43 minutes, they play Anthony Davis 44 minutes, and they lose.
Right.
And now they go home, and those guys are very likely not at their best Friday night when they, in my view, have the better chance to win. Does that not move you at all, Tim Legler?
That is a very schlep rock approach to it, right? You walk around with rain over your head all day.
Well, yes.
Because what if they play 43 minutes and win, Greeny? That's possible. And now the series is over, and you get even more rest, right? And like I've been saying, the biggest thing you cannot do is mess around and let Klay Thompson get unleashed, where he goes off and he feels like a different player going into game six. Maybe even Jordan Poole finds himself, right? So, you know what's crazy? I think the tone of this whole thing is this is a completely one-sided series. Here's the irony. Except for some questionable shot selection on the part of the Warriors in a couple of games, and Larry Walker giving him a 15-point fourth quarter, which wasn't done in over a quarter of a century for the Lakers, okay? Up there, but for that, we're at 2-2 and feeling a whole lot different about where this series is. So I'm not ready to write off the Warriors just yet. And that's why Anthony Davis, LeBron James are going to play in game five.
I'm not either. We're both in the same place. We're just getting there differently. All right, Doris is going to stay with us. Let me take a quick break on this. DB has mostly, she and Jonesy have been doing the Philly-Boston series. We'll come back and we'll get into that because last night, Joel Embiid put the Celtics on the brink. How have we gotten here? What exactly is wrong with Boston? And is it finally Joel Embiid's time? We'll talk about that and more with Doris Burke as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN.
It's game five in a series tied at two. Around the screen, three, Maxey buries it.
This is exactly the start that Philadelphia wanted.
Siakam puts it down. He is lighting it up.
Every time the Celtics have had a bit of a spurt, Philadelphia's answered.
Joel Embiid, 32 for the MVP.
And the 76ers get a win for the second time in the series on the road.
I admit it, I'm stunned. With the great Doris Burke and Tim Legler with us here on Get Up, I'm everything that has happened in this series between the Celtics and the Sixers has surprised me. And up to and including, did we think James Harden had this series in him? I don't think many of us did. Did we think that Joel Embiid with that knee had that night in him? I think a lot of people were saying he probably shouldn't even be playing. And then last night, he plays like the MVP in every way. Doris, this has been your series, and you realize that you and Mark will have game six tomorrow night with us here on ESPN. How would you describe what we saw from Joel Embiid in that huge win last night in Boston?
Yeah, so Joel Embiid defensively is a terror. And like Anthony Davis, I think he surprises guys with his ability to recover and block shots. You might think you have a step or an angle, and he somehow gets a piece of it. But Greeny, I want to talk about Philadelphia's defense overall, because Boston at its best, because of its proclivity and because of its proficiency as a three-point shooting team, at their best, they are a multi-drive and kick, create open threes, and it can feel like an avalanche when it's coming from five spots. You got to be able to do two things well against Boston defensively. You've got to keep great pressure on the ball, and then you've got to be able to contain the ball. And that combination is extremely difficult. We expect it from PJ Tucker. We expect it from De'Anthony Melton, who is an underrated, excellent piece that was added to Philadelphia. But I've got to give some credit to two guys who are much maligned defensively. They are not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it's amazing, Tyrese Maxey and James Harden, when you have active hands, active feet, and you're locked into the game plan, what you can do. And give Doc some credit here, too. 26 possessions he sprinkled in his own. Boston shooting 27% against it. Philadelphia's defense has been on point in this series. I could not be more impressed.
Absolutely. And so, Legs, at what point does a series reach a point where the chess moves stop? Like they've played five games. Are there moves left the Celtics have to make here, or do their players just need to, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, they just need Tatum to give them one of those games he gave them last year in Milwaukee.
From a personnel standpoint, there's nothing left, but what is still left to be seen, they haven't really done anything to force Joel Embiid to see more traffic. And don't get me wrong, it's not easy when you're catching the ball between the elbows and at the top of the key the way that he is. But right now, he's operating in such a comfort zone with these short 15-foot shots over shorter defenders. These are practice shots for Joel Embiid. In a lot of ways, it's exactly what you'd see him take before the game when he's working out with a coach. He's getting the same shot. They haven't really made him feel traffic. Where now, can he read and can he beat you on a night or for a half with his passing? They haven't forced it to happen. And if he does, hey, maybe Maxey, Harris, Melton, Tucker bomb you out from the three-point line. And then you say, you know what, we just can't guard this team. They haven't really come up with that yet. And Embiid's in a great comfort zone. Let's see if there's some wrinkle he will see in game five at home.
Now, Doris, the tone of the conversation here a lot of this morning has been about what the Celtics didn't do to have a game in there. Legg said it really well earlier. To have a game in your own building that means as much as last night did and not even make a run. I mean, there was never even a moment in that second half where, you know, they cut it to two or anything, even like that. What are we seeing from a team that was two wins away from a championship last year?
Well, I think if there's a review at the end of the season, should they end up losing game six or the series, obviously, you're going to point to a lot of different moments. One of the things that I'm curious about, I think Jaylen Brown has closed the gap a little bit in terms of the different level between he and Jason Tatum. Now, Jaylen Brown still has to take a step in terms of his ability to not turn the ball over. And obviously, you know, Joe Mazzulla talked about, and I referenced this in game four down the stretch. There's probably under 5 minutes to go. We reset the game. And if you watch Joe Mazzulla coach during the course of the year, he navigates to a space where he tries to have two timeouts. Obviously, very disappointing down the stretch of that game to not advance the ball, to not get a shot off, to not draw a foul. And obviously, he took ownership of that. But, you know, you can't predict Jaylen Brown peeling off the strong side corner and giving up that open three. So, listen, you know, this is a Celtics team. And Doc referenced this about his own team. That emotional terrorism, those moments where your opponent puts enough pressure on you that you start to doubt yourself. Well, the series has swung a little bit. The belief seems greater in Philadelphia's camp right now than it does Boston's camp. This is an exercise in mental toughness for the Boston Celtics. Let's remember, and you may have already referenced this earlier on your show, Boston was in this exact position, I believe, a year ago. Had to win on the road against Milwaukee and then come back and win a home game. And they did it. And just like we're not ready to put the champs to bed, I don't think you should be ready to put the Celtics to bed quite yet.
Now, it was a year ago practically to the day. It was this exact spot. They were going on the road in a game six against Giannis and Milwaukee. And Tatum rose up and played a monster game and they won. And we saw them go all the way to the final. This is such a delight for us, Doris. Thank you for making the time this morning. We will see you tomorrow night for game six in Philadelphia. Thanks, DB.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That's the great Doris Burke. And again, she will be on the call. She and Mark Jones have the call of game six in Philly tomorrow night. And then our late game tomorrow night will be in Phoenix as the Suns try and stay alive. Two game sixes tomorrow night here on ESPN. We'll start your night with Countdown at 7 Eastern. In the meantime, hey, I got a new job for you, Legs.
What's that?
Ryan Clark tweeted this morning. As an aspiring TV producer, I would like to propose the pilot for a touchscreen show with Dan Orlovsky and Tim Legler. Should be in a versus format called Dan Has Legs. The name is a work in progress, but their touchscreen prowess is not. Legs, that last touch was money. And by the way, Dan O is in. Orlovsky tweeted back, I do this show for free for you, coach. What do you think, Legs? Can we make a deal here?
I love everything about this suggestion. First of all, Dan and I talk about this kind of stuff all the time, and that's a perfect name. Come on, RC to come up with that name on the fly like that, I love it.
I know.
They've used every iteration of Legs to introduce me for segments in the 22 years I've been here. We have a new one now, I think. We just created it.
Yeah, and if there's one thing I know for certain, if we're going to do this, I'm going to get a cut. I don't know how, but I'm making sure I do. My first take coming up top of the hour, by the way. Are the Celtics cooked? Can KD and the Suns still win the series? J.J. Redick, J. Will, Legs, and more. Debate that on first take top of the hour right here on ESPN.
Come on.
Get Up is brought to you by Max's Class of 09, now streaming only on Hulu. All right, we got a minute to play. War First Take takes over. Let's pick tonight's games in the order in which they'll be played. Miami and the Knicks here in New York. Here in New York at McGarden. Friedel, who you got?
The Knicks. I'm rolling with Jalen Brunson, and the Warriors will find a way.
All right, well, you jumped me there, but fair enough. We got the Knicks in game. Well, who you got in the early game?
I'm going Heat. They smell it. I think the Knicks are wobbling a little bit. I'll say the Heat finish on the road.
All right, so I got to break the tie, and I'll take the Knicks because I think I'm in. I don't want people
Heat
yelling
Island.
At me.
Heat Island.
All right, let's go to the late game here. Warriors, you already gave it
Warriors.
To us. Warriors. Warriors win tonight.
Warriors forestall the end for at least one more day.
Warriors are going to win tonight by 30. I've been telling you this for two.
Why even? Why can even I send into the game?
I don't think they should. I think they should leave LeBron and AD Yes.
Okay.
They should just hang out, have dinner in LA tonight.
At least I believed anything is strong enough to believe in that.
I'll die on this hill. See you tomorrow. First Take now.